Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglio along with Charlie Long. It's our two-lane Tuesday, and a little after 4:30 p.m., we'll have on with us the head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Sumrall, will join us, talk about the Green Wave's big victory over Tulsa. And Bob and I were talking about that, Charlie, a golden hurricane. Man, ain't got no damn hurricanes in Tulsa, Oklahoma. How you come up with that nickname? But we'll talk about that game, upcoming opponents. Got a little bye week, so you'll be able to heal up a little bit for the Green Wave before they crank up into the middle of all the conference action. And then a little after 5:20, Mark Schlereth will join us to talk NFL, Saints, all across the board. But, Charlie, it's this time of year I know you love because it's baseball time. And it's the wild card round. And, man, I walk in and I look up and I hear it. Eddie Vedder singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley.
How about that, Mike?
From Pearl Jam. And, man, I was telling you, like, kind of seeing that evolve, how, you know, a couple generations of fans grew up. Braves fans, because you could catch it on WTBS. That's when cable first started to crank up. And Cubs fans on WGN. And that was always a big event. Who was going to sing, you know, that seventh inning stretch for the Cubbies? But, man, we got two pitching duels. One of them ended today as Detroit beat Cleveland 2-1. And right now in the eighth inning, in the bottom of the eighth, the Cubbies with a 2-1 lead over San Diego. Both these games, if this was a football game, we'd say both under games.
Oh, I mean, they're both going under for the baseball stat as well, Mike. They have over-under run totals. Look, with the Detroit Tigers in this matchup, Tarik Skubal.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Unbelievable.
He 14 strikeouts?
Very well win his second straight Cy Young. He's one of the best pitchers on the entire planet. So they desperately needed to win this game. Mike, it got kind of sweaty at the end there. I like the whole situation with Jose Ramirez in the bottom of the ninth. You know, he basically turns what would have been maybe an infield single. He gets all the way to third base on an error. So leadoff runner on third base, and the Guardians are down by one run, and they can't get him home. It's an unbelievable situation. So the Tigers take game one. Detroit, it's well documented what happened to them at the end of the season, where they really kind of crumbled late, let the Guardians go on this crazy run to come out of nowhere and steal that division. That's why this series is in Cleveland right now, as the 3-seed Guardians against the 6-seeded Tigers. But it's definitely an interesting series to watch because these two teams played a bunch down the stretch as well. But Tigers, they needed this game today, and they got it, Mike. Tarik Skubal on the mound pitched a complete gem as expected, and now they take a 1-0 series lead. It's a best of three in the wild card, Mike. And I kind of like that new rule. It used to just be a straight-up one game, best versus best, just move on. But and I know that there's a little bit of extra money in having maybe one or two extra wild card games, an extra postseason game and everything like that. But I do like the best of three format for the wild card round. It's not too much like a best of five, but it just feels kind of right. And then, as you had mentioned, San Diego currently trailing Chicago here 2-1 in the eighth inning. And Chicago got that lead on two solo shots after the San Diego pitcher Pivetta was fantastic for the first four innings.
He sure was, and the Cubs have a runner on second base, one out, and so we'll keep you abreast of that game. And then tonight, it's a love or hate between a couple teams as the Red Sox play the Yankees in a rivalry that goes back a long, long way. And then two teams we've talked about since the start of the Major League Baseball season, the Dodgers, best team money can buy, and they the defending champs. And, man, they try to tsunami you. Their pitching staff has been kind of, one word, bad. They sort of try to outscore you and then hang on for dear life. And the surprise, the Cincinnati Reds. And how many Major League Baseball drafts you and I have done, and we've talked about the Reds accumulating all this talent.
Yep.
And not all of it is in the majors now. But eventually you can see what Cincinnati is doing to try to compete against a team that checkbook, it's unlimited. And so Reds, Dodgers tonight, but Red Sox, Yankees. I know you you love the Yankees. Steve Geller I know does for sure.
Yeah,
but,
definitely Steve.
Red Sox, Yankees. And then tonight, Cincinnati, LA Dodgers. And so you got a lot of people who just have sort of a casual interest in baseball, but they watch this part of the year. As the playoffs kind of move around, they become a much more interested group. And for gamblers, it's a really interesting couple of weeks.
No, October baseball is fantastic, Mike.
Yep.
It's one of the sports, I think it's kind of up there with hockey for having one of the most unpredictable postseasons. Now, in recent years, it's kind of gone away a little bit, that the favorites have been kind of dominating come October. But anytime you can get to playoff baseball, all of these cities, all of these fan bases, all of these teams feel like they have a chance. So it's a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite times of the year as far as the sports calendar goes, because football's in full swing. And then the baseball season is finally reaching its apex with the postseason. And then we got basketball season starting up here just in a little bit. But Mike, you kind of mentioned, if you're just a casual fan and you don't really have any team in the playoffs right now, which my Astros are out, so I'm going to be a casual fan here.
I thought about you.
Yeah, I know. I'll be the one to say it. It is what it is. They were just decimated by injuries all season long. The Cincinnati Reds are an awesome story.
What a story.
We had brought them up. I think we talked with Bob Nightingale, I believe, back in March, kind of leading into the season, doing a season premiere preview for the 2025 MLB stretch. And I had asked him that, are the Reds a sleeper team? I love Tito Francona. What he's done as a manager in his entire career is he's got a Hall of Fame resume, if we're being completely honest. And so he goes to this young Reds squad with a lot of talent, both at the plate and on the mound. And then all of a sudden, in year one of Coach Francona, this team's in the postseason. And when I mentioned, you know, the Cinderella stories, and if you're a casual fan, I brought up the numbers last night during Triple Option on the second guest show about how, you know, they don't really have a ton of superstar power on either side, like the plate or the mound, but they're just kind of a scrappy bunch. They're really interesting, Mike. And the number that I didn't bring up was that on September 16th, so we're just going back 2 weeks from today, the Reds had a 3.1% chance to make the playoffs. Just think about that, Mike. 2 weeks ago, a 3.1% chance to make the postseason, and here they are with a wild card series against the Dodgers, the reigning champs looming. I mean, if you want to root for the underdog in this postseason,
that's one.
Cincinnati is your squad, and I will be full on rooting for them, not just because I hate the Dodgers, but I just love a scrappy underdog story, and that's exactly what Tito Francona and the Cincinnati Reds are.
We're going to go to break, but Horner just had a sacrifice fly. And so now the Cubbies are up 3-1, bottom of the eighth against the San Diego Padres. Hey, we'll keep you up to date on that ball game. But we'll go to break and come back. We'll talk a little bit of football right here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettillo along with Charlie Long. And want to tell everybody, this coming Saturday, the Cajun Cannon and I will be on remote at Rouse's at East Causeway Approach in Mandeville from 1 to 4. But we got a guy there that's really, he's kind of the queen pee in chess, so to speak, Willie Roaf. The Pro Football Hall of Famer will join us in the 2 o'clock hour, but Willie Roaf will be at Rouse's Markets in Mandeville, and he's got a meet and greet from 12:30 to 2 p.m., and then a little after 2 o'clock, Willie Roaf will join the Cajun Cannon and I at Rouse's Markets in Mandeville, and again, we'll be on East Causeway Approach with off weekend for LSU. Bobby and I will be doing our Saturday afternoon special at Rouse's Markets, and we'll be joined in the 2 o'clock hour by the Pro Football Hall of Famer himself, Willie Roaf, and Willie will have a meet and greet at Rouse's from 12:30 to 2 p.m. this coming Saturday. So, man, come on out, come see the Cannon and I, but most importantly, come see Willie Roaf. You don't get a chance to see a lot of Pro Football Hall of Famers. You get a chance this coming Saturday at Rouse's Markets. Want to tell everybody, in the ninth inning, the Padres sort of survived. They got out of the eighth inning 3-1, but they've already got a quick out. So the Cubbies, two outs away from winning game one of the playoff kind of series in the wild card version of things in baseball. Charlie, last night we saw Miami they beat the Jets, two bad teams, so to speak, at this stage. Achan, man, again, he's impressive, dude. I mean, man, I love to the Saints I picked him. He's got speed you can't teach, and he can run the football. He's not the biggest cat around. But also we saw a guy hadn't played in 2 years. Darren Waller comes up with two touchdown catches. The bad news for the Dolphins, Tyreek Hill goes down with a knee injury, with a dislocated knee, and he's got ligament damage to it. And it's really questionable if Tyreek Hill will hit the field in 2026.
Yeah, it was a grisly injury, Mike. I mean, I didn't really want to see the replay of it, but it started circulating on Twitter, and then he just kind of get a look at it, and it was no doubter that it was a severe, severe injury. Gets carted off the field, take it to the hospital, an ambulance, and obviously, as you mentioned, season ending for Tyreek Hill. And that's why they went, I think, and scooped up Cedric Wilson Jr. off the Saints practice squad. That was kind of the secondary story of the Sports Flash today. But it did happen. Cedric Wilson Jr., who has history in Miami, returning to the Dolphins after he was with the Saints for a couple of years.
Yeah, Charlie. And so that's tough. Anytime you see that sort of injury happen to a player, you sort of know it's not a real good injury. Hey, we're going to start it off early today, but as our Tulane Tuesday segment is brought to you by Fleet Supply Warehouse, providing wholesale distribution with next-day delivery throughout South Louisiana. The head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, Coach John Summerall. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
I appreciate y'all having me on. Hope y'all are doing well.
Doing well, Coach. Win this last Saturday against Tulsa. And Bobby and I want to know, maybe if you can straighten this out, this Golden Tornado Hurricane team, how'd Tulsa get that nickname?
You know what? I'm not sure. That's a great question.
Ain't got no hurricanes in Tulsa.
No, well, it was two weather teams, the Green Wave versus the Golden Hurricane on Saturday. So,
yeah.
Not often that you get two games between two weather-type teams.
Coach, you had to be pleased in coming off of the loss to Ole Miss. Your team bounced back in a big way. And he had a big game against South Alabama. But when you score three touchdowns, man, everybody knows about you. So Javon Gordon, man, everybody kind of heard about him. Now, he had a really good game against – I think he rushed for 80 yards in that football game against South Alabama, but he didn't score no touchdowns. This past week, scores three touchdowns. The first time I see him run, Coach, and I'm around a lot of track people, I could see in his gait, he was a track sprinter somewhere in Georgia, in high school, junior high school, whatever. Just by his gait, the way he runs, kind of tell us a little bit about Javon and the recruitment of him. I know one thing, Georgia got a lot of players come out of that state. It's a heavily populated state, and so you got population, you got players. But how did you get him to come to Tulane?
Yeah, it's a great question, and you're right. Javon picks him up and puts him down good, man. His recruitment, we identified him really early in the process, right when we got here in really December of 23, is kind of the back that we thought we might want in this class that as a freshman class now. And he came in, came to see us a couple times on visits. Ended up originally committing to Duke, and then really right around the same time that Darian Mintz ended up going to Duke, we ended up stealing Javon from Duke to come to Tulane. So we traded, we made a little, we don't have trades in college football, but it was basically a trade. And so Javon flipped right before signing day from Duke to us, and he got here mid-year. He came here, graduated high school in December, came here in January. That's what really helped him probably be ahead of the learning curve offensively, is anytime you get a freshman mid-year, it gives him a better chance to have an opportunity to compete for playing time. And Jaden's a big, strong dude. He's got a low center of gravity, yoked up, kind of guy that's easy to tell he's seen the weight room before. And physical, the way he runs the football, he's smart. Really, really smart kid. I think that's probably the most understated thing about him, is he's a highly intelligent kid and runs with a temperament that is a hard tackle.
Coach, one of the things with him, I can see he's got some giddy up into step. But the way he finishes his runs, I like a running back that finishes his runs strong. And that's one thing. You know, a lot of times you don't see that with an 18-year-old freshman running back. He does a good job of it.
Yeah, he's going forward. You know, he reminds me a little bit of how Mekhi Hughes ran here last year for us. A two-yard gain was always a 4 or 5-yard gain. And he's always falling forward. And, you know, amazing, true freshman, 3 touchdowns. That's happened twice for a running back in Tulane football history. And the other two guys to do it were Matt Forte and Orleans Darkwa, two obviously really good backs that both played in the NFL. And so he joined good company by scoring 3 touchdowns on Saturday, but has had a big-time impact on this team already. I'm really excited about what he's doing and think he's only going to get better and better.
Coach, this really was a tale of two halves against Tulsa. The first half, Tulsa was right there in it, 14-14 tie in the second quarter. You know, the Green Wave going on a 10-0 run to kind of close out the half. But then I wanted to ask you specifically about the second half defense for Tulane and how they just really slammed the door shut on Tulsa's offense. I'm going to throw some numbers out here. You know, Tulsa had 7 different possessions in the second half, third and fourth quarters, 3 and out, 3 and out, 9-play drive that ended in an interception, 3 and out, 3 and out, 12-play drive, 83 yards, ends up on a turnover on downs. Your defense was just fantastic in the second half, Coach, because if you take out, you know, that 12-play, 83-yard drive, which you hate to do because it happened, but it didn't matter because it ended up being a turnover on downs, 24 plays for 36 yards for a majority of the second half. Your defense just locked down Tulsa and really slammed the door shut.
Yeah, you know, early in the game, they had us a little off balance defensively. They ran a trick play that went for 51 yards, I believe. And then in a short yardage play, they hit us. We had them really probably off the field, and we you know, lost a guy in coverage. We were in great coverage, and then we just lost our eyes and gave up a 72-yard touchdown. There was two plays in the first half that accounted for 123 yards of their total offense. And then really from those, take those two plays out and you look at it, and it's like, man, they were averaging a yard a play basically. And so played really good defense in some spots. We got to limit the explosive plays. Those will kill you. They drove me crazy on Saturday. We didn't start very clean, but once we settled in, our guys up front controlled the line of scrimmage. You know what? We had a really big day in TFLs and sacks, and being in their side of the backfield, their side of the line of scrimmage, our defensive front really dictated and controlled the flow of the game. And once we settled in defensively, we played really good football.
Coach, I did a national show, and they asked me about what's the one area you see on the Green Wave football team that can really get better. You know, you get a bye week and then throughout the season. I said, I think it's in the pitch and catch part of the game. Got to understand with Ratzlaff not coming here until late. And, you know, you got a lot of moving pieces. And that is a lot to do with timing, the pitch and catch part of the game. Would you agree that that's the one area throughout your football team that you can take it from one level and go to the next with some more time, with some experience, and basically some rapport that maybe you didn't have early in the season?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think that's the area where we could make a big jump, you know, and some of it you have to credit who we've played. You know, I think Ole Miss really covered us up, and I think they've proven to be a pretty good defensive outfit on the back, and they got good players. And early in the year, like the Northwestern game in particular, I really felt like you felt like our timing and just Jake's understanding of maybe how a certain guy's gait was going to control how he ran the route and the tempo of which things were going to happen in the throw game was a little bit off. Week 2, it was a little bit better at South Alabama. Week 3, I thought we looked really, you know, as clean as we looked all year against Duke, and then go play Ole Miss. And I think they sort of choked us out a little bit, to be quite honest. They didn't give us a whole lot of room, and we didn't handle it well. And then last week, did some good things. So I do think that's an area where we could take a big jump. I hope as we get into conference play full-time, our receivers are able to create more room and separation to make some of those throws a little easier. I think Jake's going to be more confident in who he's throwing to and how the offense is maybe built to do some things that can make it easier on him. And we got to do a good job of giving him some layups, if you will. You know, I think something we talked about today with our offensive staff is like, hey, if they're playing 9 yards off, it's okay to take a 5-yard hitch and see if they miss a tackle, you know? And so I call them gift throws, like the kind of throws that I could make to the receiver almost. And so we're just trying to figure out how we can continue to grow our throw game. You know, we lost our top four receivers off of last year's team in regards to pass catchers. So I like our receiving group. It's deep. I don't know that we have a clear cut, like number one, like I've said multiple times, like Mario from last year, or even a Dante that was the number two from last year. But I think we got 7, 8, 9 guys that can go out there and play competent winning football. And we just have to make sure that we're running good routes, protecting, doing, throwing multiple passes on time with how we do it.
Coach, this, I guess, was in late May. We had you on, and I told Charlie after we got off, I can tell Coach Summerall likes his defensive line.
Oh, yeah.
And you broke up about
it. Hell yeah, I did. I liked him then. I like him now.
Yeah. And so I told him, man, I could tell by just, you know, your expressions about certain things. And for a three-man front, you're playing 8 or 9 defensive linemen. So that has really become something you talked about right after the spring that has really come through for you, that defensive front. Not a lot of teams have great depth along the defensive lines. You look across college football, that's a rarity that you're playing 8 or 9 guys. But on a three-man front, that's a real rarity.
Yeah, I like our defensive front depth. And then when you add in the boundary stand-up guy, that bandit, we call it the bandit in previous lives. I've called it the jack or the dog, but that guy for us, too, has been really impactful with Harvey Dyson and Mo Westmoreland and Jawry Garner, you know, a local product from St. Augustine, getting a lot of reps last week. But that group, man, Santana Hopper was really productive Saturday, 4 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks. Harvey Dyson had 2 sacks. I just think that group, well, anytime you can roll guys in and you still have really good players out there and they can go be fresh, man, that's the name of the game up front on the D-line. And I like that group. I think kind of like I was saying a minute ago about us settling in the league play and hopefully being able to create more separation at wide receiver. You know, you hope that when you get into conference play and you got people who maybe have similar resources to you to put rosters together, you hope that your strengths or what you think is your strengths are obvious and glaring and they can take games over. And I feel like our D line is kind of where we've built a good group that should be able to control the game and should be able to affect how people can't run the football and how they can't just drop back and be comfortable or casual in the pocket at quarterback. And so I like where that group's at. We got to keep growing and keep getting better. But I think we're headed in the right direction.
Well, Coach, if you have more games with 6 sacks and 13 tackles for loss, I think that defensive front is going to be having some good performances. I did want to ask you, though, you know, kind of on a more sour note, Dixon Agu, the leading tackler of this 2-lane Greenway squad, the linebacker, goes down with a non-contact injury. I know that you had said post-game that it looked pretty severe, pretty serious there as he was carted off. I want to get, you know, any kind of an update on that, and then also the linebacking core as a whole and what guys can step up in replacement for Dixon if it is as severe as it kind of is worried.
Yeah, Dixon, it is a substantial injury. He's going to be on the shelf for quite a while, having a little procedure done today to get it healed up. But, you know, he's really a good football player and a great young man, and it's a bad deal. You know, he's been playing really good football. You know, in that room, he is going to be out for a lengthy period of time here. And in that room, you know, Sam Howard's obviously kind of the bell cow. He's a big-time leader for us and does everything the right way. And you got Chris Rogers and Makai Williams, who have been playing a significant number of snaps prior to even Dixon going down. And then a couple of guys that we need to step up, and we'll kind of manufacture 2 players for Dixon almost moving forward, is J.C. Joseph. I think you'll see him play more on base downs, first and second down, normal-type situations. a little bit more, and then you'll see Dallas Winter Johnson maybe play some third down package stuff or throw game package stuff. We think it could be a pass, and then Mekhi Williams will be the guy that probably picks up a lion's share or gets more reps than he's been getting. He's already been playing really good football this year on defense, but also he's been a great special teamer here, and so some other guys got to step up and be ready to just kind of elevate how they're playing, and they're going to get a bigger pitch count of reps. And, thoughts and prayers with Dixon as he recovers, and got to get these guys ready to go that are going to have to fill in for him.
Coach, one last question for you, and this is off script, but we don't have nothing scripted to begin with, so it sort of settles things anyway. Hey, growing up, do you have a favorite baseball team, Major League Baseball team?
Yeah, you know what? I'll probably get blasted over this, but I love the Yankees growing up, and so I know it sounds that's a cliche bandwagon answer. Here's the deal: my dad worked for the federal government. My dad worked for the Department of Defense. We're from the South. My mom and dad both grew up in Jackson, Mississippi. I got family, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, East Texas. That's kind of where everybody I'm related to lives, and. But my dad worked for Department of Defense for a long time. And prior to me being born back in the 70s, my older brother, who I'm very close with, my parents moved to New York for my dad's job in the Department of Defense. And my brother would go to Yankees games with my dad. This is prior to me even being born. And so when I was born, man, my brother would buy me a Yankees hat every year. And so my brother kind of brainwashed me. And then one of my brother's college roommates ended up playing for the Yankees a little bit. And so we used to go get access to go in the clubhouse and do some things in the clubhouse and back in the day. And so because a buddy of my brother played for the Yankees for a while. And so I'm so daggum busy now. I know the Yankees and the Red Sox play tonight in a wild card.
Yes, they do.
I can assure you this. I'm at the point in life I lose no sleep over a daggum baseball game anymore. I got plenty of my own problems that the Yankees can win or lose. It ain't changing how I'm sleeping. Now Tulane winning or losing changes how I sleep. All right, so
That's great, Coach.
I love baseball, and I love very much better than going to a pro baseball game.
It's a fact.
Coach, you could have lived at my house. My grandpa was the biggest Yankees fan, and I think the farthest he ever went in life was Pensacola, Florida. I mean, he never traveled, but he was the biggest Yankees fan. Man, he would talk to you about Babe Ruth and, DiMaggio and all these guys. And then, oh, man, you didn't say anything bad about Mickey. I mean, Seven no. was the guy. Yep. And so it's so funny how so many people from the South, because of the fact the Yankees had tradition and winning, and then you think in the 70s, Steinbrenner comes in, and they have that run in the late 70s. And we got to see Mr. October and Reggie Jackson and that group. And Ron Guidry, man, how about that?
Louisiana Lightning from Lafayette
in that bunch. Coach, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to have you on.
Thank y'all. Appreciate you. Roll wave.
Thanks, Coach.
All right. That was our Tulane Tuesday segment with Tulane Green Wave head football coach John Summerall. Is brought to you by Fleet Supply Warehouse, providing wholesale distribution with next-day delivery throughout South Louisiana. And for you Cub fans, you're going to be happy. As it ended, as the Cubs beat San Diego 3-1 today, we'll come back and talk a little bit more about it right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long. Want to tell everybody at 7 o'clock tonight, it'll be the Saints Hour with Mike Hoss, and he'll have on with them Saints Senior Vice President and Assistant General Manager Jeff Ireland. Jeff does all the scouting for the college ranks for the Saints, and also tonight, man, a dude who got some talent, and we got it shown right in front of us this past weekend, Jonas Sanker. That dude can play. Now, I thought early on with him, he took some bad angles to the football, in coverage. There was no bad angles against the Bills. Jonas Sanker, he did miss a tackle early in that game, but boy, he's got some talent. Real smart young man. You can tell he gets it at another level. So Mike Hoss in the Saints Hour will have Jeff Ireland and also Saints, and I think a promising young prospect here in Jonas Sanker. We know you can't always listen to our entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy to listen when you want, how you want. Listen to this show and WWL Time Shifted Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Charlie, we talked a little bit about it as we ended up our Tulane Tuesday segment with John Summerall, but the Cubbies got it done 3-1 over the Padres today.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Mike, they got that insurance run in the eighth inning off of a sac fly, or was it a, yeah, it was a sac fly.
Sacrifice fly, Horner.
Correct. Yeah. And then now you're looking at what the Padres were able to do to respond. That is exactly nothing. Mike, the Cubs bullpen in this game, 4 2/3 innings pitched, not a single hit given up. So, listen, they were locked down for the Cubs against the Padres in game one. So now we have Detroit taking a 1-0 lead over Cleveland and Chicago taking a 1-0 lead over the Padres, and two games that have been pitching duels so far, Mike. And we got the Boston Red Sox and the Yankees coming up here at 5 o'clock. So we'll keep you updated throughout the show on that, too.
I bet that last one ain't going to be no pitching duel.
Reds, the Reds and the Giants? Yeah, we'll see.
I kind of don't believe that's not how the Dodgers play. Hey, we'll be back to finish it off here in our number one of Sports Talk right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglio along with Charlie Long. Want to thank Coach John Summerall for our weekly Tulane Tuesday Fleet Supply Warehouse segment talking about the Green Wave. We found out something we didn't know. He's a Yankees fan. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.